Welcome to the Louis Body Roller Coaster Podcast. I'm Andrew Sapula, the editor and producer of this podcast, and the son of podcast Linda. This week, we are replaying an episode from Season 2, where we met Bill Kramer, who showed everyone how to live a positive life with Lewy body dementia. We lost Bill last week, but we are thankful he shared his laughter and positive outlook with us all. Now, let's get started.
Welcome back, podcast family.
Yes, welcome back, y'all. So, okay, let's get started. This week, we want to welcome Bill and Sharon. They're from Pennsylvania. I met Bill back in 2018 in another group. And I tell you, I just think the world of him. But I'm going to let them tell you a little about themselves. Can y'all both share with us who you are, where you live? And Bill, how old are you now? And what age did you start having problems?
I am now 69, and I started having problems, I guess 2012 was the first issue.
And it's 2021 for anybody listening. And Sharon, you're his better half, other half?
Well, I prefer better half, but...
Me too.
Oh, that was sweet.
We actually live in a suburb of Philadelphia. We're about 45 minutes outside the city.
I just told them, now I know we're neighbors. Next time I'm up in PA, we'll stop in and visit. So I want to welcome both of you also. And let's just jump right in. And I'm just going to put this out there, Curry, because I am going to scold you on this episode. But just you said the medical advice thing earlier. I'm just letting everyone know. I got to bring something up later. I'm just saying. Sorry, I got to do it. So tell us about some of. So we always try when people come on to just talk about those first symptoms that people noticed that made you both nervous and made you want to get checked. And I know when we spoke, you both said that you noticed things at different times. So Bill, do you want to share what you noticed, and then Sharon can jump into what she noticed?
First time I thought something was wrong was. I drove to a meeting. I was a labor mediator and walked in and I saw the secretary's face, like looking out. And she said, "Mr. Kramer, what are you doing here?" I said, "I'm here for the meeting." "There is no meeting." And I went back and looked and said, "Oh my God, I drove 40 miles the wrong way." So I missed that meeting and I missed the other meeting. And I thought, wow, I don't know how I did that. Well, next I sat down at a meeting a few weeks later and did not recognize the people that I've now worked with for almost 7 years. And I had the right, like Linda, pink top, Joe, blue glasses, because as they introduced themselves, that's what I did. So I came home and told my wife, and she, you know, we just weren't really sure what was going on. The last thing that triggered it was I went to a 7 a.m. meeting, and I left the house about 6 o'clock in the morning. I came out of the meeting around 9, happy that we settled, called my wife to tell her, and she said, "Do you know what you did?" And I said, "No." Here I left the garage door to our home completely open and the inside door to our house where you could just walk in. I left that wide open. And she didn't find it until like 8:30 when she went to work. So we said, "It's time to go see somebody. Something's happening."
Yeah. And Jim does the similar things that you said now. Every time he attends the Lewy body dementia meets on Wednesdays, he has a little purple book and he'll write down, even though he's done it every week, like he'll probably put Bill, PA, whatever, like if you were in the meeting now, he'd say, "Bill, red shirt," just like you do. He calls them workarounds. He did a lot of workarounds before he realized something was up. He just figured out the workarounds for quite a while before I found out. So Sharon, what did you notice?
Actually, I noticed quite a while ago, even before he went for treatment, that I noticed his hands had a little bit of a tremor in it. I never said anything to him because I thought, well, if I notice it and he doesn't think it's anything, if he thought it was something, he would say something to me, but he never did. And it turns out that obviously that is one of the symptoms of Lewy body part with Parkinson's. So that was one thing. And then it was kind of a light bulb went off when he did leave all the doors open in the house. It was like that's not in Bill's behavior to do anything like that. So we both agreed at that time that it was time to get it checked.
Yeah. When you walk Bill, do you sway your arms or do they stay still at your side? Do you know?
They stay there at my side. Like I put them in my pockets because they weren't swinging anymore. So I started to walk with my hands in both pockets. But now, they did not swing.
Was that before Sharon realized something or was that one of your coping mechanisms?
It was kind of before because I remember walking down the hallways to the separate rooms where the parties were and my arms just weren't doing a normal process. And I just noticed them one day, well, that's really strange. My arms are by my side like I'm in the army.
Yeah.
It was weird.
One of the other things we really noticed as well is Bill in his earlier years, well, for a number of years, was a drummer. So when we would stop at a red light, and have a turn signal on, Bill would tap this little beat to the turn signal. And we were at the turn signal at the red light one day, and he couldn't tap it. And that was something he had done in his, since he was a teenager. And all of a sudden he could not find that rhythm. And that was very concerning to us too, because that was kind of innate to him. It just came naturally and it was no longer there.
So can you play the drums now, Bill?
No. I pick up my sticks that I have left in here and once in a while I'll try to do it on the bed mattress. In my head, it's so weird. In my head, I know what I want to do, but my hands just won't allow it. I guess when the signal is down there, it just will not work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can understand that part of it.
Yeah, it was very upsetting to Bill at one point because he played in our church praise band. And obviously, he had to give that up. And that was very difficult for him because everything you give up, you know this if you have LBD, that everything you give up pushes you more to a lack of independence. And it's very humbling and difficult for people to manage.
The drumming thing was really devastating for me because I used to be able to sing and I got throat cancer. That took my voice away. So all I had left was my drumming of 50 years in vocals and now the drumming's gone. So it was quite a punch to the heart. I'll tell you that.
Well, we always ask our guests to share your journey getting the diagnosis. So can you share with us the steps you took to find out what was wrong and get the diagnosis?
Of course, I made an appointment with my regular doctor, and he sent me for a sleep study. And at the sleep study, he said, I do have an issue with REM sleep. So he referred me to a sleep doctor who put me on some medicine, and the conditions were still there, so we went to a neurologist, local. He sent me to a hospital somewhere for like a 4 or 5 hour test. It came back and they designated it as cognitive impairment. And he brought me back 6 months later after this medicine and I actually was worse. And he said, look, I'm a country bumpkin as far as what I think you have. You need to go to Philadelphia. So we got down there and got hooked up with an international doctor who designated it as dementia, but she would not put a tag on it. 4 years later, I finally got my insurance to approve a SPECT scan, and they did say it was absolutely probable Lewy bodies with Parkinson's.
So why wouldn't they put a... Besides just the blanket term dementia, did they say why they wouldn't?
She said that at that point, she didn't want to put a name on it because most people put Alzheimer's on it. And that's really not what you felt it was, because the one doctor said you definitely don't have Alzheimer's. But as far as what we think you have, we don't have proof to say that's what you have.
They didn't have the diagnostic testing, or let's put it this way. The insurance company wouldn't allow the diagnostic testing. You had to go through several hoops before they allowed that to happen. So we, you know, bided our time and did what they said. And then finally we did get approval for the testing that needed to be done to prove it was Lewy body.
Yeah. And considering there's technically no real test yet, but there's, you know, scans, I'm only asking because they need to talk to the patients and then look at all your symptoms, the whole you, not just your brain, the whole you. Because the sooner you get that diagnosis, the sooner you get medicine that can help you with the symptoms. So I do believe it's getting better because all of us are speaking up, like doing you guys coming on this podcast, and we have to keep screaming at the rooftops. But giving a blanket diagnosis, and she didn't think it was Alzheimer's, so it's just important that hopefully things change and people start getting an early diagnosis. Because, you know, Bill, like the medicines, there's medicines that can help with things. And hopefully that'll change. I'm hoping.
We were the mindset of two, and not everyone is like that. Some people are shy and timid, and Bill and I are not. And we will push ahead and be somewhat obnoxious and persevere and push our way through the system to get the answers that we want. And if that's one thing we can tell people, it's just not to take no, or you can't, this can't be done for an answer. You right. got to keep pushing forward.
Or a blanket, like you have some
blanket
kind of dementia.
Diagnosis, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I agree. We say that all the time. Like that's why we've been trying to be advocates for those who don't have people like me and you, Sharon and Bill and Curry, who can fight for themselves. But so Bill, let me ask you, when you were first having your symptoms, did you keep them to yourself for a while before sharing them with Sharon? And if so, why? And what were they?
I'm the kind of guy that shares everything. It's like, you know, I'll say my life's an open book. So I would come home and tell Sharon, you're not going to believe what I did. I drove to the wrong place, you know, and then I didn't know this person's face. And we sat down and talked, and she said, you know what? I think something's going on. Of course, for me, it was a joke. I tried to laugh off everything. But when I started telling her reality sunk in, that, you know what? Something is going on. So I don't do that stuff. That's just not me. And I didn't hide it from her. I just came right out and told her.
And my mother passed away from Alzheimer's. Right. So when he was explaining things, he couldn't remember people's names and went to the wrong meetings. You know, the light bulb went off. Something cognitively is wrong here. So we pursued it right away. I mean, we're in year 7. You know, you read 3 to 5 years, but we are in year 7 because we were so proactive. I believe, you know, Bill is still doing so well considering because we pushed ahead and got an early step on it.
Yeah, because you read now it's 5 to 7 years from diagnosis on average. Well, it's getting that early diagnosis is a big deal because if you have to fight for it and it takes years, that's why there could be, you know, less time on the back end. So I think you were sharing with us, Bill, a story. Like when this was all happening, I know you were laughing it off, but was there something in your mind? You were like, what is going on? Because I know you shared with us a story about your boss calling you out on concerns. You want to share that with us?
Yeah, as I said, I was a state labor mediator, and my boss and I got along. I mean, I didn't hear from him in 6 years unless he called and say, hey, how are things going? He was just, here's my 3 rules. If you go by them, I'll never see it. So for 6 years, I saw him at, you know, a yearly meeting or something like that. Then all of a sudden he calls me and he sounded kind of mad. And he said, I have the secretary on the phone because this is an official call. And I said, are you kidding around, Bill? He said, no, this is serious. You haven't filed reports. One school's on strike. I read about it in a paper. You should have told me last week. I said, I did. I have the reports right here. And I did. I had them in a pile. And I picked them up as he was reaming me, actually. And I, oh, my God, I never did them. So I picked them up from the side where the to-do pile was, just switched them over and never recorded them. And he said, yeah, I said to his, he said to his secretary, you know, Bill was one of my best mediators. He's falling apart. What's going on? So I said to my wife, we better get to the doctor before I get fired, because now Bill's really aggravated. And I swear today, I sat and did those files.
And that was the catalyst for Bill and I to decide after our doctor visits that it was time for him to leave his job and to give up driving.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one. So what did, so you said that you wound up telling your boss.
Since I had the cancer, I called him and said, hey, Bill, I need to talk to you. And he said, oh my God, the cancer's back. I said, no, it's probably a little worse. I said, I have Lewy body dementia. And he said, my God, no wonder you're making all these mistakes. I said, Bill, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I'm calling here to give you notice right now. I'm going to have to resign. I mean, I can't remember things. I can't drive this to the right place. You know, just too many reasons that I might hurt somebody else. Or I might hurt myself. So at this point, I'm going to have to remove myself from this position.
Yeah.
That was tough.
I can so relate when you're talking about your driving and going to the wrong place. One thing I ran into was, I drove at night. So I would leave the truck stop like between 7 and 9 at night and drive while everyone else was sleeping so I could have an empty truck stop to sleep in during the day. But anyway, I'd leave the truck stop and I may be a mile from the interstate, you know, and by the time I got up to the interstate, I didn't know if I was supposed to go east or west. I couldn't remember where I was going. So I would go ahead and take the ramp and pull over and go through my bills to see where I was supposed to be going. And then also I found myself, I'd be going down the road like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And now this was a Interstate 10 or Interstate 40. I knew them like the back of my hand. You know, I could tell you where I was by the mile marker. And I could, all of a sudden, I didn't know where I was, didn't know which way I was heading or anything, you know. So I would have to pull over and get my bearings before I proceeded anymore. So I can so relate to what you're talking about with your driving. That's, yeah, I just wanted to put that in there.
It's really scary.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So I think Sharon already kind of answered my next question, Carrie, about advice in the beginning is just to be a squeaky wheel and don't take no for an answer and just be in their faces. That's what we keep telling other people, too, that are struggling.
Mm-hmm. So okay, I'll go to the next question. Bill, from someone who has LBD or Lewy body dementia to another one, what would you share with others listening about getting the diagnosis, but letting them know there is still a lot of good life to live once you receive a diagnosis of this magnitude? You've really been an inspiration to me through the years I've known you, and I do want to reiterate that, and to many of those in our support groups with your positive attitude in life and your positive post. So can you share with our listeners on how there's still a lot of good life after diagnosis of Lewy body dementia?
And wait, I got to jump in and say, you know, you have a bromance with Curry there, Bill. I'm just saying. There's a bromance going on, people.
She says, I've got a crush on you, Bill.
He talked about you all the time. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have his phone number? Now Curry has Bill's phone number, and I'm like, oh, he's probably never going to answer my texts now.
I really admire the way he's living.
Yes, he does. When he speaks of you, Bill, it's nothing but admiration on how, and just meeting you. Like, you're smiling right now. You know, you try to make light of everything, even though it's can be a, you know, you've been through cancer and you lost your hair. I mean, come on. So, but yeah, you just have this, you give off this aura of inspiration. So I just wanted to tell you, Curry's your, there's a bromance there.
Curry, Bill is very inspired by you as well. He finally said to me the other day, he feels like he found a soulmate to speak, someone that understands completely what he's going through. And that is so important for someone with the disease to be able to connect with other people that understand.
Because even though my wife is my caretaker and she's here a lot, there's a million times a day I'll say to her, I don't want to wish this on you, but I can't explain it to you because you're not going through it. Curry is going through it. So I can talk to him and he'll say, oh, yeah, I had the same thing. Well, you can't do that to somebody who's not going through it. And this is a horrible disease and they just don't understand.
Yeah. And before you answer, that's why it's we keep saying it's important to join a support group, you know, like either the LBDA one on Wednesdays and now Curry's doing one for just those because and I told Sharon about the Saturday ones, because if you go to another support group, not about Lewy body, like, I can't understand what you guys are going through. And you can't really understand what we're going through. So getting into a support group with people like spouses only for us, Sharon, that's whatever we say, people get it. Just like you, it's obvious, like you two can share what you're going through and you get it. So there's my little spiel on support groups because I think they're important. All right, now you can answer his question.
Yeah, when I first got my diagnosis, and I'm going to be honest, I went through the stages of grief. I mean, it was like, you got to be kidding me. You know, my life is over. Oh, my God, 5 to 7 years. And I started counting years. I'll be dead before my granddaughter graduates kindergarten. And, oh, my God, this is horrible. And I had loads of me days. Like, you know, why me? I feel so bad. Then I started reading up on it. And I realized there were groups out there that, not too many that were specific to Lewy body. And I found LBDA and the offshoot of our group, which is where I first met Curry. And I'm not the kind of guy who's in a group and like kind of likes it, but there was something different. There was actually fun. Like, you know, we all have a disease there's no cure for, and here we all are sitting laughing about it. It was just incredible the way people got around, you know, what the disease is. And we also spoke, which is really good. It goes back to what I said before. Everybody there knows what's going on. I hate to use the word stages. I use the word phases. You know, we're all in different phases of this disease. And, you know, for a while, I didn't go under. You want to go out? My wife would say, no. I was just so angry that this thing picked me. But now, you know, the years have gone and I always call myself the new me, because you never know who you're going to be. If Louis pops up, you're going to be a different person. And he make you an entirely different person. Now I've gotten to the point, my wife and I go out to movies. We go to eat. We go to family functions. We go to church. We just went on a vacation. We're planning on another one. Life's not over when they tell you got Lewy body disease. And the one thing, if there's one thing I can warn anybody about who was diagnosed, cross out the 5 to 7 years that you read. Don't believe it. The man upstairs, God, is the only one who knows when you're 5 to 7 years.
That's true.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And I know somebody posted in, I think it was in our Journey Facebook page today, someone posted a picture of the stages of grief. And you just, it's like a U-shaped, I'll try to remember to post it. It's like shock, numbness, denial, anger, just like you were saying, Bill, fear, panic, depression. Now we're going to go, you know, now we're going to go up the other side. Re-entry, thoughts, new relationships, new strengths, hope, affirmation, and helping others. So there is this, when they posted it, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like as caregivers, I went through the same thing. So yeah, and I like that you say it, because there aren't, people say there's, I don't know, 7-15 stages of Lewy body. They're not, they're phases. They're, I don't even know, phases, up, down, you know, it's just, there's still life left to live. And I appreciate that you shared that so other people know that too.
You betcha. You betcha. So Bill and sharing this questions to both of y'all, how soon did y'all tell your family and friends about the diagnosis of Lewy body dementia, and how did they react?
We told them right away. We've always been, with Bill going through cancer and he had a heart attack, and we have found our family as a great source. Our family and our church family is a great source of strength for us. So keeping it to ourselves wasn't helping us at all. So we shared it with everyone. And most people, we look at it as most people, we had to educate about it because people didn't know what it was. And I really believe that's our part of our purpose in our journey here is to educate so people understand this disease and can help others with it. But we have a real supportive base. And of course, they embraced us. And to this day, they are still, our friends and family and church family are just amazing to us. And that's how we get through a lot of what we get through.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great to hear.
That really is great.
For me, I was glad the family all got together and got to hear it. And they were, you know, my one son was not, or you're going to have a cure. It's going to, well, finally he realized, you know, there's no cure. I used somebody else's line to show me the face of the person who survived. You can't, because there is not a face to show. But they all took it very, very well. And they actually, like if I go to my stepdaughter's house and there's some functions, she has a quiet room for me. Like the noise makes me crazy. You know, I'm going to go in the room. And I go in the quiet room and I'll sit there and watch TV, read a little bit until I'm okay, I can go deal with it again. So they all, I mean, really, really take care of us.
That's very important too.
Yeah, yeah. To having a quiet space. Because I know, Curry, when all your kids and your grandkids come around, it's overstimulation. And Jim is with loud noises. We were in the car and I must have hit something in my phone connected to the car and it was turned up and music came on loud. You would have thought you stabbed him because he was just like just shocked right out of his shoes. And that, yeah, I see that like noise is a big thing with him. Yeah, but that's a having a place where you guys can go where it's quiet to just
the noise, the everyone moving and hustling around. The lights, everything, just it overstimulates us.
Yeah, yeah. So for Sharon, for you, what was one of the most frustrating things you went through to get his diagnosis? Is there anything you experienced you could share with our listeners to know or to look for when seeking a diagnosis, or they need to speak up? Because it's always, if we can teach them to, if this happens, overcome that hurdle to get the diagnosis quicker, I think that would be helpful.
I guess, and my perspective as a caregiver is I am Bill's advocate. You know, I will do whatever I need to do to help him get through this. So I think it's really important, especially in the beginning when you recognize something is off or wrong, that, you know, the person with this disease is in a state of shock and disbelief and the unknown. So to be able to be there to support them and help them in the journey, and, you know, two heads are better than one. that applies in our case. We work together, we're partners in everything we do. And it's important from the beginning to have that, whether your advocate is a son, a daughter, a niece, you know, whoever, maybe it's not your spouse. That can happen too, that your spouse can't deal with it. So you find someone that can be your advocate, because you can't do this alone. Or at least my opinion is you can't do this alone. You need, it takes a village to do this.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. So we'll talk about the support groups again at the end, Curry, your next one. So you and Bill can share the importance of those as we get to the end. Yeah, sorry, I'm jumping ahead on you. So I'm sticking with Sharon. Sorry, Bill. I want to ask you to share a little bit what we talked about. Well, we are talking about support groups, so I'll ask her and then you can ask your support group question, Curry. Sorry, I switched them.
Okay. So when Bill was diagnosed early, just with some form of dementia, we knew from our research, we knew from researching online that we suspected Lewy body and his symptoms were pretty classic. So I joined a local support group at a nursing care facility. And I stayed about a year, actually, but my frustration with it was it was so diverse in the types of issues that we were talking about. You know, some of the residents, well, first of all, a lot of the people that were there as a caregiver, their loved one was housed in the nursing care facility. So that was a whole different dynamic. They had someone caring for their loved one while I was home caring for mine. And so that there was just a big separation there of, I had trouble identifying with the rest of them because their stories and situations were just so different than mine. And after a while, I finally just stepped away because I just didn't feel I was getting as much out of it as I should. The facilitator was great and understood my concerns, but you know, it wasn't just about me. It was about a group of people and everybody had different issues. So she had to try to play to the masses. And so I didn't get as much out of it as I thought I should. So I did leave and I have not been with another support group.
And wasn't your group geared towards Alzheimer's?
Yes, it was mostly geared a little more toward Alzheimer's, although I was very vocal about what we thought you had. And the facilitator would do her best to kind of play that in, but it still was mostly about Alzheimer's.
Yeah, and like Bill said, it's totally different. I did the same thing. I went to a support group, and it was about Alzheimer's, and no one could relate. I can hear their stories, but it's totally different, this dementia, than the other ones. That's why Kerr and I just decided after we figured out how to do a podcast, which we still don't know. Thank you, Andrew, how to do it. My son makes it sound like it, but that's why we supported him. So, Curry, why do you go to support groups?
Well, we hold a support group on Mondays and on Fridays for people living with Louie, their caregivers, their spouse, whoever, for everyone to attend. And I really get a lot out of those, because I get to hear things my wife is going through, or issues she may be having, because she doesn't go to any support groups. And I wish she would, but she doesn't. But so I get to hear both sides of the story in that support group, and it really helps me a lot. And I find others that attend that have Louie in it, they also enjoy hearing the caregiver side of it also, because we want to know what you all are going through. You know, I want to make it easier for my wife if I can, and I want to understand what she's dealing with. And so that's why I think the Monday and Friday groups, where everyone attends is so important to me. And then the Thursday group I do is for people only with Lewy body or those seeking a diagnosis. And it's a completely different group of people from Monday to Friday to that group. There's a couple regulars that make all the meetings with me, but I have found that there's a totally different group of men and women who attend my Thursday group because they're not, they don't want to hear the caregiver side for some reason. They're not to that point yet or something. I don't know. But it's a good meeting, and we talk about other things other than Lewy. We talk about all kinds of things, but we do focus on, you know, if someone's got a problem, we discuss it. And if one of us has already been through it, we say what worked for us, you know. But I feel support groups are very important.
Yeah, I can see all everyone's sides of it.
They are important. It's just you have to find the right one.
Yeah.
And I didn't find the right one.
Yeah.
You know, so I need to keep searching. And thank you, Linda. I will.
Well, now that I have your cell phone number, I'll be texting you all Saturday. 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Where are you? Where are you? I know. I'm like, with him, I'm very protective of Curry. When he does his, we try to keep him to an hour and a half. And when he does his 10 minutes before it's over, I'm like, you have 10 minutes. You have 5 minutes. You hung up, right? Are you done? You done?
She does do that.
Yeah, but it's important because I know you guys can, sometimes you can talk forever. But so let me ask, Bill, where are you in your journey? I know you guys share with us you were put on hospice in January of this year.
Right.
So where are you? Do you go to your neurologist now? And if not?
No, last time I went to my neurologist, I lost 85 pounds just last year. And when I started this entire process, I was 254 pounds. Now I weigh 124 pounds. So when I went into the neurologist, she looked at me and said, "Oh, my God." I said, "Yeah, I look a little different." And she said, I'm going to be honest with you. I think you may have 6 months to a year to live, Bill, and there's nothing more I can do for you. I'm an honest psychologist. I'm not going to make another appointment and just take your money. You need to go in hospice."
No, actually, she said to look into palliative care.
Oh, did she?
Okay. Yes, she said palliative care. So that's what we looked into. And when we talked to the palliative care place, they said, "Oh, it sounds like you qualify actually for hospice." And, you know, that was like, oh, my gosh, and sent panic into our lives. But we had them come and evaluate. And sure enough, because of the rapid weight loss, it did qualify him for hospice.
And it was, you know, to hear hospice, the word hospice, everybody thinks, "Oh, my God, you're good." Because when I tell people I'm in hospice, their voices get quiet. "I'm so sorry." And so I'm not dying yet. Anyway, you know, this is it's kind of like a pre-death course where they're kind of teaching me what's happening, what's going to happen. And you can either be afraid of it or accept it. It comes back to the grief or the acceptance. And I'm quick to accept, you know, if that's what's going to be, that's what's going to be. I can't stop it. There's not a damn thing I can do. I can cry about it, and I do. Don't get me wrong. There are times where I'm so mad and so angry, I just sit and I cry about it. But the tears go away, another day comes, and, you know, life goes on until life doesn't go on. And that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And I think when people hear hospice, they think people only have a week or two to live. And that's, we did a whole episode on the difference between palliative and hospice. I still think you're still alive and kicking. So you palliative care, what it worked for you, they just kind of assumed that you needed more a hospice care instead. But I'm glad that they mentioned that to you because a lot of people don't know that they're eligible. Well, it depends on the state we're finding, but people, once you get this diagnosis, you're eligible for palliative care right away. Just make those calls, like Sharon said, be the squeaky wheel. Because Jim gets PT twice a week now because he's lost so much muscle in his legs. And I'm worried about him falling. And he wouldn't exercise if, you know, if I said go to the basement and work out, he's not going to do that. I wouldn't do that if somebody told me. But if I have a trainer, you don't have a choice. So Tuesdays and Thursdays, that's what he does. So I'm going to ask you each this, both this question. What would you do differently, if anything, if you could go back to the early stages of the illness?
I think I would do the exercises. That's why I smiled when you said it. Dr. Lipper used to say, you got to go out and exercise. And I said, yeah, okay. And she said, I know you're going to tell me, okay, in 6 months, where did you walk? You're going to say, I didn't walk. I said, you're probably right. And now, once in a while, I walk down to our mailboxes and come back. But what I would have done differently was, I think I would have got more involved physically and maybe nutritionally. May have made things better for me. I don't know, because I didn't do it. I'm just not that kind of a person. I lived my life so long. So when my wife and I discussed those things, I said, listen to me, I'm 69. They just told me I have a Lewy body. Why don't I want to exercise? I'm going to eat. I'm going to start doing what I want to do, because there's a time limit here. So that was wrong. I really, looking back, I think I made those mistakes.
Yeah. How about you, Sharon?
Something we might do over is, initially when we got the diagnosis that there was some kind of dementia, we kind of thought life stopped. You know, we're like every other married couple who has hopes and dreams of retirement and what you're going to do when you retire. And we had plans of moving. We vacationed in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and we'd love it there. And we had talked about moving there after retirement. And once we got that diagnosis, it was like, oh no, we can't do that. You know, no, we have to stay here because Bill only has a certain amount of time. And that proved to be not true. And we probably could have, 5 or 7 years ago, going to Myrtle Beach and lived for several years before probably returning home to be with our family. But right now, we're still pretty self-sufficient. So we may have ended up in Myrtle Beach if we had been a little more less afraid of the unknown.
Yeah, if we knew then what we know now, and what Curry had said about, you know, life's going on, and had we known that now, and hey, life does go on, that's why I keep throwing out, forget the 5 to 7. That stopped us from having our dream.
Mm-hmm. Bill, like me, I know you've gone through the ups and downs and dips with this disease. I'm on a bit of a down dip right now myself. Thanks to urinary tract infection. But Bill, what would you tell others when they were in the dip, and how you got through the dip?
I'll tell you, my wife and I call it the rabbit hole. And I can tell when I fall a little deeper into it, the disease is processing a little bit. And what we call Lewy, as far as I'm concerned, Lewy's here. And when I have a day like that, I wasn't able before, but now I'm able to, like, feel it coming on, like a kind of a fog, and I'm going away and he's coming in. I can warn my wife now. Before, I couldn't do that. What I usually do when I get in those dips is I sit and I do the stare, and I'm quiet. I pray. I put on old music that I used to play and sing, and that kind of takes me back to a real happy moment in my life. And after I do that for a while, it kind of picks me up and puts me in the best spot I can be for that day. But the important thing to know is, no matter how strong you are at showboating, you're not going to showboat your way back to who you were before you got up that way. So you have to learn to accept. My favorite line is, except the new me, whenever that new me pops out. because if you try to fight the new me, you're going to lose. And it's going to be a really tough time for you and your caretaker.
No, I like that, the way that saying.
You know, it's something I've always done too, is if I don't remember to do it, my wife Linda does. When she sees I'm down with Louie and I'm just in my chair, can't get out of it, I just zone out, can't do anything. If I haven't remembered to do it, she will go get my tablet and my headphones and bring them to me and say, "Hey, Curry, you need to put music on." And I do. That works.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Now comes the scolding part, because Curry's been telling me for a couple of weeks he just hasn't been texting me as much, and he said he's been really tired, and he has a UTI that took you down pretty good, and now, you know, your hallucinations came back. I'm happy that you now know what caused that, but give our listeners advice now that you 3 weeks in, now you have medicine.
I should have known something was up when my hallucinations started back, because for four years now, my doctors had them under control where they're not vivid anymore. I just see little black critters running through our house, and across the living room, down the hall, stuff like that. And here the last month or so, my hallucinations have become more vivid, like they were before I got medicated, and recently they've become more recent, happening several times a day now. And I should have known there was something wrong, but anyway, I just assumed it was Louie, and that my medicine wasn't working as good.
Yeah, he said, because you thought it was a Louie dip.
Yeah, and but come to find out, no, it wasn't. We did the home test the other night for UTI, and then went to the doctor yesterday, and sure enough, I've got a UTI, and it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, but can I ask you though, like a month ago, did you have like the classic UTI symptoms? I just want, I'm trying to know. So I know if Jim starts, did you have that in the beginning where you are listening?
I had the urgency, yeah.
Okay, but not the burning or anything.
I didn't have the burning until the other night, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just festering.
And see, the thing about me having the urgency, I never have that, because most of the time I fight incontinence, and usually I never know when I need to go pee.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden now, I'm realizing that, hey, I gotta go and I need to hurry. So that should have been a red flag for me right there.
I just wanted you to share, because somebody else out there might go through the same thing. So they know right away. And what are you going to do the next time something changes, Curry? What are you going to do?
I'm going to tell my wife, Linda.
There you go. Good job. Good job. You'd never know we haven't met in person, would you? he's my big brother. We're protective of each other. But anyway, we can't thank you both enough for coming on and sharing your story, because all of you sharing and everybody who comes on and shares your stories and experiences is only going to help others know, for one, that they're not alone, and sometimes even help others learn what to ask for with doctors, or when to tell the doctor or your wife something is off, Curry. So for our last question, any final words of wisdom to our families listening?
The thing I would like to say is, and I've read this on our group a lot, I don't understand why doctors tell me I don't have Louie body, but everything I look at tells me. And all I type is, get another doctor. So my advice, not a suggestion, this is strong advice. Keep looking for a neurologist who doesn't say, you think you have Louie, who? Make sure you go to somebody who knows what they're doing. They can catch it early, and you can have a good life for years.
Well said.
You bet.
How about you, Sharon?
I have a little bit of a different perspective that, you know, I think no matter how deep and dark things get and how difficult they become, it's really, really important to stay as positive as you can and surround yourself with people that care and love you so you can lean on them. I know, you know, all of us, we start every day with counting our blessings. We have a multitude of blessings. We have more than most people have. And when you focus on the positive things, it kind of helps start your day. That, you know, you can't worry about what you don't have. You have to worry about what you do have and what's good about it. And doing those things every day help keep us. We pray a lot. We find our faith in God so helpful to keep us lifted up. And it really is all about your attitude. Especially as a caregiver, I know, believe, trust me, I know how deep and dark and ugly it can get, but you just have to go with it and you just have to focus on the good things.
Very well said.
Yeah. And anybody who's getting an early diagnosis, that's not always easy in the beginning, but it does get easier. And I still fall down the rabbit hole. Curry knows when I'm going down the rabbit hole and I never know what's going to start it or cause it, but yeah, but I agree. Positivity.
You're the only person that can pull yourself out of that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I just want to, real quick, before I go any further, I want to thank you both for coming on. Bill, I've really enjoyed you. Yeah, I really have. And Sharon, it was a pleasure to meet you.
You too.
Folks, that's all we have time for this week. Remember, you can email us with suggestions on what you would like us to discuss on a future episode, or you can ask any questions you have, and we will sure do our best to help get you the best answers.
And also remember, we post the link to the podcast in both the Lewy Body Roller Coaster Facebook page and on our Journey page, our Journey with Lewy Body Dementia page. And if you're interested in helping as a volunteer or as an advocate, because you've heard Sharon and well, I always say that there are people out there that don't have advocates, please send us an email at lewybodyrollercoaster@gmail.com, because the more people who reach out to us, the more people we can help. And if you want to learn how to be a supporter of the podcast, please see the episode notes as we post the information on that there.
Okay, folks, Bill and Sharon, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Until next week, this is Linda.
And Curry signing off.